I could choose to talk about something different. Since we're starting over again. So, I wanted this evening to talk about what is sometimes called feelings. The Buddhist word is vedana, and it's often translated as feelings. But it often causes a lot of confusion, because most of us, when we use the word feelings, the English word feelings, we use it, I think, somewhat synonymous with the word emotions, though it's not exactly the same word. And the Buddhists have a much more limited meaning for the word feeling, and sometimes it lends some confusion. But anyway, sometimes I call it the hedonic tone of our experience. And the idea is that in Buddhist psychology, every possible experience we could have, every possible experiential thing we can be aware of, has one of three qualities to it, or tones to it. It's either pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant or unpleasant. Pleasant, unpleasant, or neither of those two. Sometimes people call it, say, the third one they call neutral. And in that, this is kind of the this is something that's part and parcel of all things we can experience. They have these three qualities to them. The Buddha put a lot of emphasis on the importance of learning to discern or notice the pleasantness or unpleasantness or the neitherness of whatever experience is happening, because more often than most of us realize, a lot of the reactive ways in which we respond to the world around us, pushing things away, wanting to hold on to things, is based on whether things are pleasant or unpleasant. Very simply, kind of amoeba-like, very kind of simple kind of experience of pleasantness or unpleasant conditions for us, oh, I don't want that, or I want something different. And often we add a whole layer of interpretations and stories and opinions very quickly. And it looks like perhaps what we're reacting to, what we're kind of reacting to or responding to is our views and opinions that seem very true. But often they're misled kind of justification for our movement away and towards pleasantness and unpleasantness. I think sometimes when you know, you meet someone you don't like, there's a kind of unpleasant feeling. Very quickly kicks in all these ideas we have about why they're an unsavory kind of character. And then it kind of, then we've compounded the situation. We take something which is unpleasant and we've added all this layer of interpretation on top of it to justify why we're pulling away. And it might not be true, our interpretation of the situation. Same thing with pleasant situations, the desire for pleasant situations. I could, you know, have finished my ice cream cone, which I found very pleasant, and then I could come up with, I could have want more pleasure, and I could come up with a phenomenally, somewhat logical, rational explanation of why it's very good for my health to have one more scoop of ice cream. And then what I think I'm relating to is I'm taking care of myself. And really, it's very simple. Sometimes it's very, very simple. It's simply I want pleasure. Not that I'm, you know, trying to do all the stuff with my health. That's just kind of a justification added on top of it. So the Buddha said, stressed very much the importance of understanding the feeling tone of experience if we want to understand how we build our universe of, or build our reactions and responses into what eventually becomes conditioned responses, habitual responses. I think some months ago I gave the wonderful little mythological story of the ancient king who, before people had shoes, and he was walking around his kingdom, and he got a splinter or something in his foot, and he got upset, and so he went to his minister and said, carpet the kingdom in leather, and that way no one's going to hurt themselves. And the minister said, well, you know, that's a bit expensive. Why don't we, instead of carpeting the kingdom with leather, let's just carpet everybody's feet with leather. And thereby shoes were born. were invented. It's much more sensible to take care of the problem of suffering at the point where the contact happens than it is to try to protect ourselves, you know, kind of blanketly, the whole universe, and make it soft and cushioning, whatever we can. So then, to make this, turn this story back into, you know, Buddhist practice, what we try to do in mindfulness is try to become awake, pay attention to the point of contact, to the point where life actually is in contact with itself. Life is built out of contact. Contact with the sounds of the freeway, or the birds singing, or contact with the seeing our friend, or contact with the ant crawling across me, as it was earlier today. There's all these moments of contact that happen. Experience of hunger in my stomach is a kind of a moment of contact. The awareness, and it's based on all these moments of contact that we then start constructing much of our universe. Now, some of it is, you know, it's quite fascinating to watch a baby do this. And some of it then becomes internalized and part of our kind of software that's somewhat semi-permanent within us as we're growing up. But some of it is some of the way in which we reconstruct our reactive universe is happening day after day, moment by moment, depending on how we relate to rudimentary things, the pleasant, unpleasant, or the neitherness of our experience. So I asked you then, end of the meditation, to pay attention a little bit to the simple pleasant and unpleasant experience. And also to notice, could you leave it alone without adding or subtracting anything to it? Or could you notice what you added to it? Was there aversion or resistance or desire or whatever? So I'm wondering now, what was that like for some of you to do that? Was that you find it interesting? Yes.
I found it easier at first to hang on to the pleasant sensation, and of course wanted to go away from the unpleasant sensation. But then, the second or third time I did it, I noticed I couldn't tell a difference either way. And I think towards the end I was able to hold on to the unpleasant sensation more, find out what it was really like rather than how I was reacting to it.
Great. So initially your conditioning from before was you kind of have a preference for pleasantness. Oh, great, I'll hang out there. Mm-hmm. But the unpleasantness, no way. You know, and other people find that? It was a little bit easier to be with the pleasantness at first? Or all the time? So what else did you find? Yes.
That's why I sit here, because I like to feel breeze coming in.
Uh-huh.
And I always sit here because of that.
Because
it's pleasant.
Uh-huh. Nice. So we make decisions in our life based on whether things are pleasant or unpleasant. And some decisions are pretty nice, you know, and innocent. And some decisions can be disastrous. What else? Yes.
Well, one of the things I discovered when I was in the unpleasantness was that it went away. It just completely dissolved the unpleasantness, and so I was left in this nice open space. But as soon as I acknowledged this nice open space and started enjoying that, the unpleasantness would come back.
The flow of contact, the flow of experience, it just kind of rolls along and rolls along. And what's important, what you can discover with time, is that it's possible to let the rolling experiences arise and pass, dissolve and come back again, pleasant, unpleasant, whatever might arise. And it's just rolling along without any interference from you, and without any... And without you interfering with it, or it interfering with you, which is very nice. And that's a kind of a so-called, maybe in quotation marks, a pleasant experience, which is outside of pleasant and unpleasant. It's just allowing the pleasantness and unpleasant neutrality, just kind of rolling through, without reacting to it, in a neutral way, in a sense. And that's extremely pleasant, even though it's outside of pleasant and unpleasant. Someone else? Yes?
I found that when I was either with the pleasant or with the unpleasant, that the mind would very quickly go to the other side. You know, I'd be feeling a pleasant sensation of air on my face. And the mind would very quickly go to the pain in my buttocks and then back again. It didn't miss anything. The experience was beyond my control in a sense. My mindfulness wasn't strong enough to just stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would, although I could bring it back, it'd check out other places very quickly.
Uh-huh. Yes, Renata.
When you said for the second time to go to a pleasant experience or to the strongest type of experience, that the experience had gone, it was kind of like a feeling in my chest, and it wasn't there anymore, especially after paying attention for a while. And then I remembered it, or I remembered something else, but it was more memory of the pleasant experience than other. And I thought, shall I create it now, you know? But it was really not there.
Mm.
And I think that's why what I do often, kind of like hang on to a feeling that's still not there. And
hang on through the memory. Yeah, many of us do that. Now, what's interesting about memory, now in Buddhist psychology, there are six sense doors, or six places where sensations can arise. And they're the five senses that we know about. And the Buddhists add a sixth one, which is called the mind door, which is aware of kind of contents of mind, memories, ideas, thoughts, mental phenomena. And the Buddhists believe there's like a sense organ up there. That's how when you think or you have an idea or have a memory, that's how you know that you're having it, because there's an organ that perceives that. So memories can, just like, you know, the sensations of a breeze can be pleasant, or if it's, you know, Alaska gale blows through, it's kind of maybe unpleasant. So just as physical sensations can be pleasant or unpleasant, so the contact with mental phenomena can be pleasant or unpleasant. And so like a memory can be pleasant or unpleasant. And then what's interesting is how do we respond to that pleasant or unpleasant memory? Is there a desire to hold on to it? Or is there a recoiling from it, a resistance to it? Yes?
I noticed the quality of my attention. I felt dull and sleepy.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a sexual thought, and I noticed alertness. And then I noticed humor around that.
Uh-huh.
The difference in quality. In my experience with pleasure and pain, I had knee pain. And it was, what I noticed when I was searching for something pleasant is that the knee pain was still, you know, sort of overpowering. But what I noticed, it was like a heat, and when I was looking for something unpleasant, the heat was really strong, but when I was looking for pleasure, the heat was a little less. You know, it's like I was intimate with it, not so intimate.
So you're saying when you're looking more closely at the unpleasant sensation, the heat, it seemed to get stronger.
It got stronger, and I noticed an impatience.
Uh-huh. It can happen with mindfulness. Mindfulness sometimes functions like a magnifying glass, and either pleasant or unpleasant sensations or experience can actually be more so because we're, you know, paying more carefully attention to it. And that's just, you know, one of the things that can happen. But with that kind of strengthening of attention that can accentuate the experience, we also have the opportunity to be more closely attuned to how we respond and react to it. So impatience is a kind of resistance. And that's not needed. It's extra. We've added to the situation. And what we're trying, one of the things that's very important, very useful around studying the pleasant or unpleasantness of experience, is to really notice what we add on top of it. whether we resist it, whether we're holding on to it and want more of it, whether we're impatient or judging it or whatever we might do, to see that that we do that, not to judge that on top of it, but simply to see that, oh, this is something more than just the experience. And then to see that there's actually a gap or space or room between our reaction to the experience and the experience itself. And in that room that we create, if we really sense the room or see the room that's there, there's a possibility of being much more at ease or free in the situation. But for most of us, I think, if we're not paying attention, our reaction to the experience and the experience are entangled with each other. And if they're entangled with each other, there's no room in there, and we get really tight and we start reacting kind of habitually to the situation. So one of the reasons to emphasize the importance of noticing the simple pleasant or unpleasantness of experience is to help us create more room so we can be a little bit freer in the experience of what's going on. So I haven't done this too much. I've done a little bit. But I've known people who have taken it as their primary mindfulness practice for some time to only pay attention to the pleasantness and unpleasantness or neitherness of the experiences which are happen to rolling through their meditation time or any time at all. So they're sitting here, you know, and they feel the in-breath is kind of constricted, and they say, oh, there's an unpleasantness there. Oh, and there's a sound of the dogs barking. There's another unpleasantness, perhaps. and then the temperature's just right. I feel this nice kind of soothing feeling across my skin, my arms. So, oh, there's pleasantness. Just, and they go, unpleasant, 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 pleasant, pleasant. Simply to feel, sense the pleasant unpleasantness and the neitherness of what an experience might be in order to help them become free, in order to help them not to get entangled with that experience, to see it in its simplicity of what it is. Yes?
I have a question, though. Is the neutral feeling as predominant as the negative or the positive?
Well, the way the Buddha worded it was not neutral, but rather neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So it's kind of neither. It's kind of like there's kind of a lack. It's more like a lack than neutrality. It's a lack of a feeling tone to it. A lack of feeling tone. Lack of pleasantness or unpleasantness. So it doesn't really qualify as something which can be as intense. It tends to be kind of subtle, and most people overlook it.
Yeah.
It's actually said that it's extremely unusual and rare to experience a really neutral experience like this. Most neutral experiences, what we call neutral, are neutral because we're not paying careful enough attention. And there's no to cultivate. You mean cultivate being more sensitive to it, or cultivate more neutrality?
Well, so you discern it more easily and not get caught up with positive versus negative.
I don't think paying attention to the experiences which are neither pleasant or unpleasant particularly helps us become freer of pleasant or unpleasant. It's interesting in Buddhism. And Buddhism has a lot to do with becoming happy, by becoming free of suffering. But the place to pay attention to the way to become free of suffering in Buddhism is to study the arising of suffering, the beginning of suffering, how suffering arises. And by really getting to know that well, and one of the places that's really important is this very thing about pleasantness and unpleasantness. If we can really see the very, very almost amoeba-like kind of ways in which we respond to pleasantness and unpleasantness, we recoil or go towards, that's the place where we can see how we begin building a whole different, you know, universe of justification or universe of craving or desire or aversions and all this stuff. It can often start at something very, very simple. So I don't think it's a matter of kind of balancing it out by being able to be with neutral experiences more. This is not the same thing as equanimity. It's built, all experience, you're not going to get. I shouldn't say that. What I was going to say, it's maybe it's good enough for now. You know, I'll qualify it. I'll qualify it. The amount of pleasantness and unpleasantness that you experience in your life is just part of life. And what I didn't want to say it was that, of course, you could increase the amount of pleasantness you have in your life by getting a massage or one way, you know, just spend your whole, you know. But if you get massage all day long for 24 hours a day for 7 days a week, after a while, it starts getting unpleasant. So, but you can do things. And some people are pleasantness fanatics, always looking for pleasure. And sometimes there's a great confusion in people's minds between pleasure and happiness. And it's very, very important to distinguish pleasure from happiness, because I think a lot of people who are addicted to pleasure more than they are to happiness. I don't know so much the psychology of the physiology of addiction, but I think a lot of it has to do with pleasure. And people are looking for pleasure to fill some kind of need or neediness. But pleasure is very different from happiness. And happiness is not found from chasing after pleasure, getting more and more of it. In Buddhism, we said that happiness arises, a very profound kind of happiness arises, when there's an openness, an open-handedness to life's experience, where we can let the pleasant and unpleasant experience roll through us without getting hooked onto it, without getting reactive to it. And just to be open, to walk into a room and meet someone who's an unpleasant person and not, you know, recoil and have your stomach get all tight and, but how are you? Not to deny that this person is maybe unpleasant. There are unpleasant people. You know, they haven't showered in, you know, 2 weeks. And there was someone up I saw someone today who I thought was an unpleasant person. I was actually scared by this person. It was unpleasant to be around the person. I was scared because it was, you know, he looked like a. Very angry, down and out militiaman who lives in the woods, probably been in the woods, you know, for, I don't know, forever, and looked very angry and was wearing army fatigues. And I thought, this is, you know, this was an unpleasant experience to be near this person. Just the way it is. But I could see that, this is an unpleasant experience to be near this person. And then knowing, recognizing that, is, and not trying to make it, you know, a pleasant experience, not trying to say, oh, everybody's wonderful, I'm supposed to make everybody pleasant. I can see, this is an unpleasant experience. Now, having done that, can I see the human being there? Can I see there's more than just the unpleasantness? Can I relate to this person without my judgments and aversions and resistance? Can I just simply be there with this person? And I think that's offering, being very generous. And that's one of the great gifts we can offer. Or conversely, if we meet someone who's a pleasant person, there are pleasant people, if, you know, around. All of you, I think, are pleasant. But there's, you know, levels of pleasantness, right? You know, whatever. And this kind of, a certain kind of pleasantness might be, you know, the perfect object of my sexual desire. And here I go. Rather, you know, and then I create all kinds of misery for all kinds of people. Because I decide that this particular pleasant person, I'm supposed to, you know, whatever. And people who've been the recipient of that kind of, know how wonderful and generous it is to be left alone. To be, you know, just treated as a human being. Hopefully the person sees their whatever, their lust or their desire, or their, you know, and sees how, based on the pleasantness they experience, lust and desire arises, and just leaves it at that. It's fine to have lust, but you can just leave it. You don't have to act on it. You can liberate your lust by not acting on it. Liberated lust is kind of pleasant. Unliberated lust is very unpleasant. So, am I making sense? So, pleasantness and unpleasantness, can we see how we, you know, how we do all these things in response? And if we start seeing our response, our reactions to it, I think we can offer the world much more friendship, much more compassion, much more care than we usually do. And I think a lot of what this Buddhist practice is helping us to move towards is to offer compassion, friendship, loving kindness, presence, respect to the people we meet and the world we meet, the objects we meet, so that we can offer that as opposed to our reactive clinging and pushing away, resistance and aversion. Now, what's interesting about resistance is that it often happens, and also desire and clinging, it often happens so quickly that we end up relating to our resistance instead of the actual unpleasantness. So, for example, the forever knee pain that meditators often get. Resistance to knee pain, resistance to any kind of physical pain, often makes it a lot worse. But often we relate to the resistance, and we hate the resistance, we can't stand it, and we're trying to run away from the resistance. And if we can kind of somehow liberate the resistance, release the resistance, we often sometimes can find that the actual original physical unpleasant situation isn't so bad after all. It's possibly actually possible to hang out with it and not freeze it. The world is made up of contact. The human life is a life of contact. Contact with the world, contact with ourselves. And that contact is constantly flowing, moving. Resistance and clinging in all its forms is a way of freezing that flow, the stream of life as it goes through, the stream of contact. And to learn to see how we freeze it is the beginning of setting it free again, so we can be in this free flow of contact again, where then when the contact is flowing, I think really that's also then when we can offer our friendship and our loving kindness and our respect to the people and things of the world that we meet. So you might a little bit study for a while this subject of pleasantness and unpleasantness. You might take it as a little exercise, like we had it during the sitting, just for a few days. Just become connoisseurs of pleasantness and unpleasantness, and then notice what kind of responses arise within you when you're in the presence of pleasantness and unpleasantness. To see, what is it? What is the response? And see, is it possible to create some room there? Not necessarily. Nothing has to change. Nothing has to be pushed away or not denied. You don't have to stop having your reactions. But can you create enough room there, so that you don't buy into them, you don't hang on to them? Notice how many times through the day you change what you're doing because you're feeling uncomfortable. Pleasant and unpleasantness is closely connected to being comfortable or uncomfortable. And is it necessary to do it, or is it even appropriate to always be avoiding the uncomfortable or moving towards the comfortable? Certainly sometimes it is, but it can also cause a lot of suffering to do that. Procrastination is one, for example. I don't want to deal with that unpleasantness today. I'll do it tomorrow. And tomorrow comes. It's still unpleasant, so I'll do it tomorrow. So, I've talked for a while. Now it's your turn again.
So, what about the quality of breath? Like, when you brought it up to me, what I was paying attention to is that, and I've noticed this over time with my meditation, is there's a pause between my inhalation and exhalation. And that seems to be very pleasant. And I'm not sure whether that's something I should cultivate or just...
No, don't cultivate it. Just when it's there, just be with it. It's fine to experience the pleasantness. You don't have to do anything about it. Don't do anything about it.
It's not that I am, but it seems like it's there more often.
So great.
Does that mean it's...
Good.
Did I...
That's fine. Okay. It means you're enjoying yourself more.
I'm just kind of wondering whether the pause in the breath is really what you're looking for, or is that not what you're looking for? Or you can't say what you're looking for.
what we're looking for is a new way of looking. So the breath is interesting because the breath can at different times or different parts of the cycle of the breath can be pleasant or unpleasant. Sometimes it depends on the different, how it is, for different people it's different things, but sometimes for me the top of the in-breath can be sometimes pleasant. If I've been very busy and a little bit frazzled through a day, I tend to be somewhat constricted. And then as I breathe in, I can feel unpleasantness, this constriction. And then for me often the out-breath is pleasant. But for other people, it's reverse. And then if we have habitual reactions to pleasantness and unpleasantness, then we might start breathing in funny ways, because we might not want to take that full deep breath because the top of the breath is unpleasant. Yes?
I had a great deal of trouble finding a pleasant experience. The ones I found were extremely mild. And what I found was that as my mind wandered off, it was more pleasant for my mind to wander off. That was the most pleasant thing. It was hard to stay with the physical sensation.
I see. Yeah, I didn't have to have emphasized so much the physicalness of experience. Any experience would have done. And if the mind wandering freely by itself and being distracted, if that's a pleasant experience, you could have just hung out there. For the purposes of the exercise, that would have been fine. Well, if what you're going to do for the next few days is simply pay attention to pleasant and unpleasantness, and you're going to keep up a constant noting, a constant recognition, pleasant, unpleasant, 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 pleasant, let yourself, don't worry about anything else. If you can do that and stay in the present moment, noting the pleasant, unpleasant, and what's going on as it occurs, if your mind wanders away, if your mind gets involved in thinking, and you can keep that up, that mindfulness up, let the mind do what it wants.
Okay, so the trick is to keep the mindfulness up.
That's hard. And because it's something hard, that's why sometimes as a very useful aid, we emphasize following the breath. As the breath is kind of the anchor to keep us in the present. And then with time, as the ability to stay in the present becomes stronger, then we can actually let go of the breath and we can just stay with whatever's happening. Yes?
I've gotten into kind of a subtle trap in that sometimes in my meditations I can focus on various unpleasant sensations in my body. And by focusing the attention there for long enough, they sort of relax themselves. And I don't know if I'm overly attached to the idea of getting rid of the bad sensations by focusing my attention on them, whether my intention is not to just observe them, but to get rid of them.
Very important distinction. And if you're concerned about it, I would strongly encourage you to study that for a while. And see, you know, which serves you the best. Is it better just to kind of constantly chasing after being relaxed? Or is it better for you to cultivate the ability to just simply neutrally look, pay attention, without needing anything to happen? Now, paradoxically, if you do that, that often leads to relaxation. But the question is a question of motivation. Because the motivation to always be chasing after relaxation is reinforcing various bad habits. So, to really become free, you want to just simply be able to sit in the middle of your experience and not need it to be any different than what it is. But, you know, it's fine, you know, occasionally it's fine, you know, in a kind of commonsensical way, you know, if you come home and you're all stressed out and angry at your neighbors and everything, and because you're all stressed out, and, you know, it's fine to go and relax a little bit. You don't have to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't stop there. I mean, it helps me to really get centered on meditating.
Yeah, it's fine to do some of it, but it's very important to be aware of your motivation. Mm-hmm. And if you're aware of your motivation, then you're not going to be trapped by your motivation or create unhealthy habits. Mm-hmm. Or if you're constantly striving after it out of desire or greed for pleasantness, you'll eventually notice that if you're being really mindful of what your motivation is.
That was sort of my suspicion, that getting hooked on the relaxing aspect of it.
Yeah, that's very common for people who meditate or want to meditate to have not only association but to become attached to pleasantness in their meditation, to think that's where it's at and where it should be. And then sometimes it is very pleasant in meditation, and that can actually sometimes make things worse. Kind of spiritual sicknesses can arise because you had all this wonderful pleasure, you kind of dissolved yourself in blissful light, and it's really great, and then you create this whole theology about how blissful white light means, you know, the devas have come visited me, and you know, and this and that, and it's really important, and you know, and all you're attached to is the pleasantness of the experience, and you create this huge theology. So sometimes it can be getting some wonderful meditative experience can actually make you a more difficult person to be around. Though it's fine to have these wonderful things happen, and I mean I hope it happens to some degree, but what you want to be very careful with is then how you react to it. You then cling to it and hold on to it and expect it and demand it next time and over, or you simply allow it to be there with open hands. It can come if it wants, it can go away if it wants. You know, it's yes.
What if you kind of your answer to the unpleasant is just to sort of jump out of it, get out of the meditation?
Could you start over again the beginning? I missed the beginning.
What if your reaction to something unpleasant or I really had difficulty with focusing on the unpleasant?
Yeah.
My answer was sort of just open my eyes
and
just
avoid it. Just keep doing it. Patience. Being very, very patient, very compassionate with yourself. And if you find yourself popping out, that's something to be mindful of. That's interesting in itself. Your experience doesn't have to be different than that. What you've learned is that you have difficulty being with unpleasant experience. The meditation was a success. You've understood something very important about yourself. And that kind of familiarity with yourself will breed with time greater patience and understanding, and eventually the ability to stay more comfortable, stay more present with unpleasantness. So you don't need to be in a hurry. Just keep doing the mindfulness. Just keep doing it. And when you pop up, just keep being mindful. I popped up. Isn't this interesting? As opposed to, oh no, I left. You know, don't think you have to do it some special kind of way or right way. What's interesting, it's very interesting how some of us have personal or family or religious or cultural conditioning around pleasantness and unpleasantness. And some people have it where unpleasantness is, you know, if you experience any unpleasant sensation, it means you're a failure as a human being. You haven't done it successfully. You watch so many commercials about what you deserve and you believe them. And, you know, I must be doing something wrong. But, you know, unpleasantness is part of life, you know. And so, or some people have certain religious training where any kind of pleasantness is, you know, taboo. And so it can be very difficult to do meditation because often with meditation comes a certain amount of pleasant experience. And if the religious tradition is, you know, especially physical pleasantness is not okay. And physical pleasantness arises just in sitting quietly in your body. That can become very painfully obvious as you do the meditation. So some people have trouble with pleasantness and some people have trouble with unpleasantness. And, yes?
When I followed pleasant experiences, they disappeared after a while. When I followed unpleasant, they disappeared after a while. What are you supposed to do then? Just hang out with the nothingness? Or do you, okay, now I'm going to switch.
Oh, if you're doing this kind of exercise, which is just an exercise, once something disappeared, look for another pleasant or unpleasant one. Just study all this stuff. I mean, there's no right way of doing it or wrong way of doing it. Just study, find out what's going on, and if the dissolving is actually, sometimes dissolving is just the nature of stuff; it dissolves away. Sometimes the dissolving is a kind of a masking of the situation. I don't want to be here anymore. And so we kind of have this wonderful, we put up the, what's it called, Star Trek, the cloaking or whatever? and so if you study it, you can kind of maybe learn which it is for you. But if it is just, you know, but you don't have to worry about it too much also. And you can just, you know, if it disappears, just go find something else. There's no shortages of pleasant and unpleasant things in this world to pay attention to. It is always happening. There's also a fun thing to do. I think it's fun. Sometime when you have a predominance of either pleasantness or unpleasantness. You're stuck in rush hour traffic. It's 5 o'clock. It's 105 degrees outside, and the jerks around you don't know how to drive, and you know, and whatever and ever. And your air conditioner doesn't work, and you know, and you're late for your appointment, and it's just really unpleasant, right? Take a few moments and see if you can notice what is pleasant in your experience right now. Because you always find something. And then do in other situations where it's totally blissful and everything's perfect and wonderful and really nice and nothing, you know, can possibly bother you or whatever. Take a few moments and see, is there anything unpleasant in this experience? And you'll find something. There's always pleasantness and unpleasantness. And one of the important lessons around that is that there's always pleasantness and unpleasantness in our experience. Do some of us have a tendency to select out of our environment one or the other? Pessimists, you know, are always finding the unpleasant. Optimists, maybe always the pleasantness. What we want in Buddhism is to become neither optimists nor pessimists. Just to be alive with what's happening. I have a couple of announcements, but I think maybe we'll sit for a few minutes, and then I'll make the announcements at the end.